All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back, and that is certainly true. WCET Radio is indeed talk radio like no other, because you're not going to find a talk radio station that covers the breadth of topics. Literally, if it is a genre of talk radio, there is a show on there somewhere. You just have to listen. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for staying with us through this very brief break. I see already on the line, so I'm just going to go ahead and bring him on. We have the guest for this hour, Mr. Craig A. Huey. Mr. Huey, thank you so very much for joining us this evening. I appreciate you giving up part of your time and coming and talking with the audience tonight. How are you doing?
Great. And Tim, it's my honor. I'm glad to be able to talk to you.
All right. Well, first and foremost, I want to make sure we want to spend a little bit of time talking about your newest book, The Christian Voter. But before we get into that, it is certainly the hot topic. It continues to be the hot topic. And you have been vocal about this yourself. I myself, I'm sick of hearing people tell me that there is zero evidence of voter fraud. I'm afraid there's a lot of evidence of voter fraud. The real question is digging in and finding out how much and is it enough to overturn? That's a question that can only be answered by getting in there. But would love to give you a few minutes to expound your thoughts on the topic.
Well, Tim, there's a lot of confusion out there about what voter fraud is. And if you're listening to the biased media, they say there's no voter fraud. They say that it's unsubstantiated. It's just not true. But it is. And let me just give you an example. One example is when I wrote my book, I wrote in one of the chapters about how we registered a dog to vote. And we got the vote-by-mail ballot for the dog at our office address. And then when I moved my office from California to Nashville, the vote-by-mail ballot followed us. Now, that is voter fraud if people do something like that. They can do something like that. There is a thing called ballot harvesting. And, Tim, ballot harvesting is probably what's going to cost the president his election if he doesn't prevail in the courts. And ballot harvesting is where one person can bring in 25, 50, 100, 500, 1,000 ballots. And it's legal in 29 states, illegal in about 16, and undefined in some of the others. And, you know, Tim, most people don't understand how in the last couple of years, election law has changed so much. And it's to the advantage of the socialists and the Democrats, because they know how to mobilize people. And when you talk about ballot fraud and ballot harvesting, they go together. Ballot harvesting is not voter fraud, but it can lead to it. We have documentation. In fact, there's an indictment in Texas right now of someone who came to a retirement home and picked up about 100 ballots, filled them out, and turned them in. Now, normally that type of thing wouldn't be caught, but they were caught, and that was stopped. But that's happening anywhere where there's ballot harvesting. You have a ballot harvester who will knock on the door. They have data as to that they would know. For example, Tim, let's say your number one issue was health care. They would know that. And they'd say, Tim, you know, our candidate, they agree with you on this healthcare issue. Can I count on your vote? And you say, yes. And then, okay, Tim, you know what? I'll help you fill out your ballot from president to city council. And you give me that ballot, and I'll take it in for you. You have nothing to worry about because I'll get it there. You don't have to mail it. You don't have to go in there with COVID. I'll take care of it. And they hand them the ballot. And I have on my website, Tim, one of the ballot harvesters caught on a Ring video. And they knock on the door 8 different days because they want their data shows them one person, the kid, the daughter, is a possible Democrat voter. They won't go to Republican households, conservative households, libertarian households, evangelical Christian households. They'll stay away from those. But they went to this one household for that one daughter, and the parents answered, and they didn't want to talk to the parents. They just wanted to get the ballot from the daughter. And so ballot harvesting, when you see, well, it started in California on steroids in 2018 when they passed a law allowing it, and the unions organized it. And you had seven congressmen went on election day, but they lost the day after. And they should not have lost at all. And the same thing with city council, assembly, other offices. They all lost after election day. And you take a look at President Trump. He wins on election day. He loses after election day. And that's the corruption of ballot harvesting.
All right. You know, and again, it's not as if that's actually illegal in most places. In fact, I have a much bigger issue with the places where it's legal to engage in the practice of ballot curing, where if they come across and see things that ordinarily would require you to reject the ballot because some piece of information's missing, maybe you didn't have your signature at the right place when they received a multitude of different things. And again, where that's legal, it's a matter of being organized. And there were some instances in a couple of states this go around too, where Democrats were prepared to take those, go out, and they felt comfortable in certain districts getting those corrected. And then in other counties that were majority Republican, where they expected Republicans to vote, they expected Trump votes, they didn't go do that. And again, that's not fraud, but it feels very dirty. But at the end of the day, it's still a concerted effort. So that's the kind of things you're talking about there, but that still doesn't negate the fact that, oh yeah, by the way, animals, like you pointed out, were able to get the receipt. I happen to know a guy who moved to Tennessee 2 years ago from New York. I work with him, and he told me that he still received his mail-in ballot from New York.
Right.
And it's like, if I wanted to, I very easily could have voted twice. And things of this nature do happen. The question is it enough to overturn? And that's the important question, and there's only one way to dig it. Go.
That's right. And just think of this. It doesn't matter which state you're in. The voter rolls are what we call dirty, meaning that there's dead people on them. People have moved away. People get multiple ballots. Some households get four or five ballots. And so when you have this in California, for example, 344,000 proven dead people and people who have moved away from a household got a ballot mailed to them. The universal mailing of the ballot opens up the ability of the ballot harvesters to do voter fraud. And they should never have voting at all where you don't have integrity in verifying who it is that's registered, who it is that's voted, and that these are clean rolls. And, you know, the foundation of our democratic republic is to have fair elections. That's what people around the world look at. And this whole attempt to do the lawsuit, to pursue this could be one of President Trump's greatest legacies, to be able to say, we're going to have fair elections in America. And he needs to pursue this. Whether he is able to prevail or not, he's running out of time, and that's the problem. The Electoral College meets on December 14th. The different states, they're going to have to certify the elections. Georgia Friday, it keeps going on. All the swing states all the way up I think it's Wisconsin on December 1st. So basically what you have is a clock that's ticking, and it's not a forgivable clock. He's got to be able to prove fraud, and if he doesn't, Tim, I'm hoping he continues this lawsuit. I'm hoping that the 2022 election will be fair and honest, because it's not fair and honest in 2020.
Absolutely. I mean, the point you were making a minute ago about the voter rolls being dirty, meaning basically that there are people on them that shouldn't be there. Most states have laws that require voters to be removed under certain circumstances, and we've seen in a lot of occasions where there's just not an effort made to do that. But worst of all, you know, it's one thing for somebody to find out that their grandmother who passed still has an active registration and try to take advantage of it. It's another thing for somebody to actually go and register a departed relative, which there have been multiple cases of that too. They weren't registered before, but they got registered after they were. So, there is some level of voter fraud that has been taking place. And you're right. We definitely need to push in the full legal, because the only thing that's going to stop people from trying to pursue these in much larger numbers later on down the road is to legitimately push this, catch the people that are doing it, and for consequences to have to be paid by guilty parties. Before we run out of time, though, we really do need to talk about your new book. Well, your newest book, I should say. You are quite prolific. And I think it's a great topic for this time. I wish it had actually come out a little earlier than September.
Right.
Because Donald Trump has actually been kind of a catalyst for the discussion about whether or not Christians can really vote for a person with the character that Trump has had, and more concerned about the man he was in his younger days than the values he was bringing to the table now, or looking at the other side and the values that they bring. But you ask the question here, it leads to the question, I should say, how is it that you are able to vote for your values as opposed to vote against your values in order to get the guy you think is going to be the best choice?
Well, I wrote this book because I took a look at conservative Catholics and evangelicals, and so many of them took a look at President Trump's Twitters, his tweets. They took a look at some of his language. They looked at how he was acting. I was thinking, you know, I don't feel comfortable with this. But I wanted everybody to be able to understand, it's not so much that you feel totally comfortable with a person. Where do they stand on the issues? What are their policies? And so I outlined 7 non-negotiables that anybody who's a person of faith has to stand by. Ones like pro-life, religious liberty, protection of Israel, protection of the persecuted church. All these line up with President Trump and a total polar opposite with Joe Biden. And so this book was designed for the average Christian to be able to see how to make sure they understand how to vote their values. And so I'm glad it came out before the election. I'm glad people read it. But here's the thing. 2 things happened this year. 4 years ago, President Trump got 81% of the evangelical vote. This year, he got 78%. Now, that may not sound like much of a drop, but you're talking about millions of votes in the key states. This could lose him the election. And so this book was designed to help Christians understand how to vote. Here's what most people don't know. $36 million was spent by Biden to go after and target evangelical Christians on TV, radio, direct mail, and a massive, sophisticated digital campaign. And they divided their intelligence of their data into those who were the what they call the persuadables, those that could vote for Biden that had previously either not voted or voted for Trump. And then a second category, the suppression. Who can we suppress? Who can we have not go out and vote? So this year we had less evangelicals vote, and we had less vote for Trump, more for Biden. Biden got more votes than, from the evangelicals than, well, Hillary Clinton did nothing with the evangelicals. Obama did a huge campaign for evangelicals. Biden did better. And he spent a lot of resources and money on that. Now, in Georgia, our nation's prosperity, survival, religious liberty, our whole thing with school choice, the whole thing with homeschooling, you name it, rides on the election in Georgia to stop the Democrats from controlling the Senate and then the House and the presidency. And so we have a lot of people buying the book, The Christian Voter, and sending it out to people in Georgia. We have a campaign to take this book and send it to every pastor, every youth leader, every church leader, and as many Christians as we can, because, Tim, here's the thing in Georgia. The Democrats worked hard. They mobilized hard. They know who their voters are. They're not going to find a lot more. The Republicans did the same thing. They worked hard. They know who their people are. Now they've got this election for two senators coming up, and what they need to be able to do is find more votes. Well, how do they do that? Well, it's the evangelical voters who 20 to 30% in any church are not registered to vote, and those who are registered, 30 to 40% who don't vote. And then you've got this percentage that was either suppressed or voted for Biden. They're the easiest voters to be able to sway. And so Georgia is key to the next 4 years, and Georgia is key as far as how the evangelicals are going to vote. So that's why I wrote this book, because there's such a powerful voting bloc. Over 25% of the total vote are people who say that they're born again evangelical Christians.
Yeah, and in the state like Georgia, any deep southern state, for example, faith still makes up such a strong part of the day-to-day life for a lot of people. I think that's part of the reason why some of the more secular parts of the country still tends to poke fun at the South and still think of us as all a bunch of toothless hillbillies hanging around. And I'm guessing since you moved to Nashville, you found out that's just not the case.
Let me mention this about the Southern voter and Southern voting bloc. These people that I've discovered from moving from California to Tennessee, these people really understand key values. They understand the importance of religious liberty. They understand the issues of life. They understand these issues. But here's the thing that breaks my heart, and that is, you know, I was the Tuesday before the election, Tim, I went to a mega church here in Tennessee. And then I went online to two mega churches to hear their services just before the election. Out of those three services, not one pastor said there's an election. Not one pastor said go out and vote. Not one pastor instructed people how to vote for their values. Not one pastor told people how to make sure they don't vote against their values. And so basically what you have is the failure of the church pastors, the leadership, and the Christians, that the next 4 years they're going to be under such intense attack on their core beliefs if they don't do something about this Georgia election. And that's why they need to pray, they need to donate, they need to volunteer to help out the campaigns with texts and phone calls. Everybody who's listening, they can do something about this upcoming Georgia campaign.
Yeah, and it really is important, especially as a Christian, to be able to have some type of a doorstop, some type of a clog in the gears, if you will, to slow down the very progressive ideology that's about to be pushed on the country otherwise. Craig, thank you so much again for joining us this evening. I really do appreciate it. And before we let you go, however, please let everybody know where they can find all of your works. You're welcome to share websites and any type of social media handles that you want to share as well. Just go ahead and throw everything out there that whatever people need to do to find you and your work.
Well, thanks, Tim. Well, listen, I have a number of articles about the Electoral College, about this upcoming election results, and about what's going on with fraud. They can all find it at craighuey.com. That's craighuey.com. And I also have information about my book, The Deep State, and about the Christian voter, and on my newsletter that gives some unique information. So they're welcome to visit that, take a look, and check it out.
All right, sir. Thank you so much again for coming on. And yeah, I hope we get a chance to talk again soon. I've really enjoyed our conversation tonight, sir.
That'd be awesome, Tim. I'd be very glad to. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that, of course, is Mr. Craig Huey.